Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make The Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Gary Parrish for CBS Sports. My opinion, he's the best around. He joins us now. You're the best, Gary Parrish.
Don, you're nice to say that. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. How surprised are you by these Final Four?
Very. You know, I think the easiest way to explain it would be I only have one of the Final Four teams in my bracket. That was Gonzaga. And then, of course, everybody has to be surprised by South Carolina. You know, the Oregon thing makes sense on a lot of different levels. That was a team that, you know, was top 10 at KenPom, I think, on Selection Sunday, was top 10 in the AP poll before this NCAA tournament started. But still, I don't think many people outside of your audience probably expected them to go into Kansas City and beat Kansas. They were a Final Four caliber team the whole time. But given the path that they were asked to take, I don't think many people had them, you know, making it all the way to Phoenix. But the South Carolina thing is just on another level altogether. Because they're a SEC school, we don't think of them as a traditional Cinderella, like a George Mason or a VCU or a Butler. But this is just as improbable as any of that stuff. You know, people spent a lot of time on Selection Sunday talking about how Wichita State was underseeded to get a 10 seed. Well, the flip of that coin was that, you know, a lot of people thought, myself included, South Carolina was overseeded to be a 7. They got zero preseason, just to place into context exactly how remarkable this is. Zero AP top 25 votes in the preseason. In other words, nobody thought they were going to be this good or anything close to it. In the final AP poll, the one after Selection Sunday but before the tournament started, also zero top 25 AP votes. They weren't good then. They lost 6 of their 9 games leading up to Selection Sunday. So it ain't like they had momentum or any of that kind of stuff. And they have been playing out of their minds, particularly on the offensive end. The defense is what they're winning with, but they've been great defensively all year. It's scoring 65 points in the second half against Duke in the round of 32. Like, there were 9 different games this year where South Carolina didn't score 65 points total. And they went and got 65 in 20 minutes against Duke. And they have continued to operate at a really high level on the offensive end. I think they're averaging above 80 points a game in this NCAA tournament. They are, quite simply, a great example of a team that got hot at the right time.
Is it sustainable, or have you been around college basketball a long time? Is this just a team that had a nice 2-week run, or is this something you think they can see through?
Oh, like, once you, like, there's not much more to see through. Like, yeah. Once you get to this point, you just got to win 2 more, right? And so the great news is that, and I think this is true for South Carolina and for Oregon, they're both underdogs on Saturday, and they should be. But if you're Frank Martin, you look in your locker room and you say, okay, nobody thought we were going to be here, but we are here. And now we're playing Gonzaga. Guess what? Not many people thought they were going to be here either, even though they're a 1 seed. They got no, you know, more right to go ahead and do this thing than we do. Yeah, they've got good players, but so do we. I mean, I think this whole, you know, I heard somebody earlier today talk about, you know, South Carolina's just kind of pieced it together with just a bunch of guys who bought in. Sendarius Thornwell was a top 40 national recruit. P.J. Dozier was a McDonald's All-American. The rest of those guys are like, you know, borderline top 100, top 150 recruits, but they got 2 studs in there. And so it ain't like they're doing this with nobody. Their 2 best players could have reasonably played it anywhere in the country. But here's my larger point. If you're Frank Martin, you say, we've already beaten Duke. If we can beat Duke, we can beat Gonzaga. And same thing if you're Dana Altman. Okay, North Carolina is a 1 seed. We're not. North Carolina is the favorite. We're not. We've already beaten Kansas and Kansas City. If we can beat Kansas and Kansas City, there's nothing that says we can't beat North Carolina and Phoenix. And I think that's what makes this intriguing, because I know who I'll pick in both games. And Oregon fans should take some pleasure in the fact that I'm usually wrong. So, like, congratulations. but, like, there's nothing that would be shocking about any result. Oregon winning in Kansas City, that was pretty surprising. South Carolina beating Duke, that was pretty surprising. Nothing that can happen this weekend will be as surprising as either one of those results.
The Kansas thing was remarkable, because I think at some point in that building, having 18,000 Kansas fans looking down at the Kansas players became a detriment to Kansas. I could see them looking up and going, we are letting all these people down. Have you seen that kind of dynamic where what should be a home court advantage turns into some pressure?
I think they had home court advantage pressure. I think they had one seed pressure. I think they had Bill Self always loses this game pressure. Because if you go back and watch the, you know, I was going to say the second half, but it's most of the game.
Yeah.
Because Oregon jumped on them pretty good quickly. Like, that's the other thing. I was talking to Rick Barnes, the Tennessee coach, a couple of days ago, because he happened coincidentally to be the one guy in America who's coached against every one of these Final Four teams. Didn't beat any of them, but he did coach against all of them. And he made a point that I thought was spot on. Like, there was nothing fluky about Oregon beating Kansas. It's not like they got hot early and held on or got hot late and, oh, wow. They just beat them. Just beat them right from the start, in the first minute and in the 40th. And I think all of that started to catch up to Kansas. And when they got down big, it seemed like they were trying to get it back all on one possession. Like, if you're at a blackjack table and you're in a hole, rather than just keep playing $10 a hand or $50 a hand or whatever it is you're playing, like, they just stacked chips and said, I got to get it all back right now. And obviously you can't do that in a basketball game. There is no 10-point shot, but it looked like they were trying to make a 10-point shot every other possession, and it just piled on them. And it was a great moment for Dana and for that program, and an impressive performance from that team. Rick Barnes told me this, and I agree with him. He said there has been no more impressive thing that's happened in this NCAA tournament than Oregon dominating Kansas in Kansas City.
Gary Parrish, CBS Sports, is with us. The big stage, the idea that now they're in the Final Four, do you believe one of the three newcomers to this stage might be more affected than Carolina? Are you buying that?
I hear that from coaches, and I suppose I'm in no, you know, a position to disagree with guys who have actually, you know, been through this thing. They do say it's a little more comfortable the second time, you know, because all of these kids and three of the coaches are going to be placed in positions they've never been placed in before. Everything's bigger now. The media room, the questions, the outlets, your responsibilities, the cameras in your faces, the dome. It's a different deal. But ultimately, you know, just because you've never been there before doesn't mean you can't, you know, you can't do it. I mean, just look back to last year. You know, those Villanova kids had never been on that stage. They seemed to handle it pretty well. And so I wouldn't rule anybody out because, you know, they haven't been through this before, but Carolina has. So Carolina's got this. Let's fast forward to next season. But does Carolina maybe benefit from not only Roy being here so many different times, but those players, really almost all of them, having done this exactly a year ago? I think that's an advantage on some level. How big, I'm not sure, but probably an advantage, sure.
I reached out to CBS because I wanted to know if it comes down to a Gonzaga-Oregon final, is that a nightmare for them? Of course, they're not going to say that. But what would it mean nationally to have 1 and 2 playing for a championship be right here, Spokane and Eugene? What would it say? Would people go, oh, all the power's there? Or would people just say it's a cute little story?
No, I mean, listen, I think you've got to respect any team, any program, any school from wherever part of the country if they are playing on the first Monday night in April. Like, you don't stumble into that game. Typically, I know that there's probably an example of somebody who didn't belong there. Georgia Tech many, many years ago comes to mind under Paul Hewitt. But for the most part, if you get there, you either have been great or you've at the all season or you got great over the past 3 weeks. So, as a basketball fan, I think it would be a remarkable story. And I know it's been told, but it's, and your audience is familiar, but like the idea that Oregon wanted to hire Mark, and Mark at least thought about it for a second, but then he decided to remain at Gonzaga, and Oregon's backup plan ends up getting it to the exact same place that Mark Few has gotten Gonzaga in the exact same year is a wonderful story to tell. And it'll be told if we do end up in that spot. But your initial point is spot on, frankly. And I don't know if my bosses would want me saying this, but like this whole Final Four is a nightmare for them. You know, like you like the cute stories in the first weekend. You don't want them in the last weekend. You know, what you want in the last weekend is Duke and Carolina and Kentucky and, you know, what else could it have been? Kansas. Like,
yeah,
that's what you shoot for from a television perspective. But in terms of a basketball perspective, this is a lot of fun because, you know, we're going to have a man who's never coached in a national championship game doing it next Monday night. That's guaranteed. And we've got an opportunity to get, you know, a national champion that almost nobody saw coming. We've got an opportunity for Gonzaga to finally shut everybody up forever. And then we've got an opportunity for, you know, a university that has invested so heavily in football finally breaking through to win a basketball championship. And I don't mean to suggest they haven't invested in basketball as well, but it would be kind of wild to think, like, who would have ever thought that Oregon would get a basketball championship before a football championship?
Roy Williams, the fact that he has navigated college basketball as it's changed, you see him arrive here with a team that is not full of one-and-done players like Kansas or Kentucky or some others have done it. Has that been by choice, or is Roy not winning those battles?
Oh, no, Roy would tell you. If he could have one of them players, he'd love it. You know, like, he would love to have Malik Monk and De'Aaron Fox on his team. He's just been missing lately, and I think that's attributable to a couple of different things. One, John Calipari's a monster, and, you know, if you're recruiting that level guy, you're usually recruiting against Duke and Kentucky. Like, that's who, like, regionally, you might run into different schools sometimes. So if it's a West Coast guy, you might also be competing against UCLA and Arizona. You know, if it's a kid from a certain city, like Memphis, you might be competing against the University of Memphis, just because kids in Memphis tend to grow up dreaming about being Tigers. But for the most part, you know, Duke, Carolina, Kentucky are going to be recruiting the same guys. And Cal's the best who's ever done it. And Krzyzewski with that USA basketball thing, he tries to discount the impact that's made, but it's made a massive impact. It is not a coincidence that Duke's recruiting went to an all-time level. That, you know, when Mike became the head coach of USA basketball, he has access to those kids in ways that other college coaches don't. He can put them on the phone with LeBron James and Kevin Durant whenever. He can, you know, I know that he was recruiting one kid one time, and he would just casually, effectively and casually, you know, send text messages to a recruit saying, hey, so I was talking to LeBron about you today, and what he told me was, and that has an impact on 17-year-olds. And so these five-star one-and-done guys, they can only go one place, and they tend to be going to Kentucky or Duke over Carolina. And then, of course, the NCAA scandal continues to hang over Carolina's head. You know, on one hand, you go, it's amazing that they're about to play in their second straight Final Four, and we still don't know what the verdict is on the academic scandal in Chapel Hill. On the other hand, because we still don't know what the verdict is, people continue to use it against Carolina in recruiting. And it worked on Brandon Ingram, the one-and-done player from Duke, who was a top-five pick in last year's draft. He was asked, why not Carolina? And he said, oh, I would have gone to Carolina, but I was scared the NCAA would issue a verdict, if you will, but right before I enrolled, or when I enrolled, and we would be banned from the NCAA tournament, I didn't want to spend my 1 year in college missing the NCAA tournament. That's why he went to Duke. And so if you look at the last four recruiting classes at Carolina, I think they rank in the ACC like 5th, 6th, 8th, and 11th. They haven't been great, but somehow it hasn't cost them on the court at all. And I do think that's a testament to Roy, who has always been known as a great recruiter, maybe a not-so-great coach, but he's been coaching these past 2 years because he doesn't have the talent that some of these other big-time programs have, but he's going to the Final Four for the second straight time.
I was looking at the Elite Eight matchups and saying, you know, if Oregon played Kansas 10 times, I still think Kansas would win 7 of those games. I think they had a bad shooting night. I think Oregon was red hot, and it kind of caved in on the Jayhawks. Who's the best team who's not in this Final Four?
Duke, probably. I mean, I on Selection Sunday, I thought Duke had that's not what I thought. I know they had more top 25 RPI wins than anybody, more top 50 wins than anybody. I thought they should have been a one seed. And then I just, in a wild story that you could, like, somebody will do a oral history on someday, because of a discriminatory law in North Carolina, these games get moved from Greensboro, North Carolina to Greensville, South Carolina. And so suddenly, with the way the bracket breaks, Duke doesn't get a 1, so they get a 2, and they get a 2 playing South Carolina in the state of South Carolina. Like, if somebody asks you why Duke lost in the round of 32 or why South Carolina's in the Final Four, it's not completely reliant on that game getting moved to South Carolina. But that contributed to this, no question. And I don't even think Frank Martin would dispute that. Like, getting to play Duke in South Carolina as South Carolina Gamecocks was a massive advantage. So, you know, Villanova would be another good example, but I think Duke is a great example. And the truth is, you're exactly right. Like, I remember a couple years ago, just as evidence that this is not the NBA playoffs, you know, the Memphis Grizzlies, which is where I live, that's why I've referenced it twice, they were up 2-1 on the Golden State Warriors. Like, they could beat them one game. They could beat them two games. But could you beat them four? No, and they didn't. And the best team tends to win the NBA championship for that reason. A best-of-7 series really reduces the upset factor. But in the NCAA tournament, I mean, we're talking about a single-elimination tournament of 40-minute basketball games with a short three-point line, that where a hot shooter, foul trouble, a pulled hamstring, a bum ankle, and about a million other things can dictate the outcome. It's a fun event, but it's not the best way to make sure the best teams actually are there at the end.
We're talking to CBS Sports college basketball analyst Gary Parrish. Gary, people are tweeting at me saying he's been so hard on Oregon all year. You've got to hear it from all kinds of fan bases. Which fan base is the worst?
Oh, Kentucky's by far. Evidence being that, like, a man had to shut down his Facebook page because he's a basketball official who called some fouls, you know, Sunday afternoon, who also owns a business, and Kentucky fans had been, you know, going wild on the Facebook page, calling his office, calling his home, making death threats. I mean, they're not all. This is true with every fan base. They're not all bananas anywhere, but some of them are bananas basically everywhere. And Kentucky has more crazy ones than anybody else. But there was a time, absolutely, where I was hearing it from Oregon fans because I do this top 25 in one college basketball rankings literally every day in the spirit of chasing easy page views at the orders of my bosses. You know the business we're in these days. And so, like, every day, it's like, why don't you have Oregon ranked here? Why don't you have Oregon ranked there? And the truth is and then it turns into, why do you hate Dana Altman? It's like, why would I hate Dana Altman? Like, why would I hate Oregon? Like, I don't hate anything. Like, I really don't hate anything. I hate rental car shuttles. Like, those are crazy. I hate it when my hotel room's really far away from the elevator.
Yeah.
Like, that bothers me. But, like, universities and basketball programs don't tend to bother me at all. I just usually look at the resume. That's what I'm basing my rankings on as we get into December and January. And there was a time, I think, where Oregon was obviously good, but I don't think they had – but two top 50 RPI wins until February. So they were obviously good, but lacking the quality wins based on schedule or missed opportunities or Dylan Brooks' early injury that would put them in that upper echelon of some daily rankings. But I consistently said from about, you know, late January on that if you told me there were eight teams that could win the national title, list them, I had Oregon on that list, you know, from February into March and on Selection Sunday as well. I didn't pick them to get here, but I'm particularly after Chris Boucher's injury, which I probably thought was going to be a bigger deal for them than it has been. But I always thought that they were capable of something like this, and here they are.
I picked against them in the second round. I had Rhode Island beating them.
I picked against them three times, and I've been wrong every time. So, like I said, congratulations, Oregon fans. You're probably a few days away from winning a national title.
I was riding on the shuttle to the Elite Eight games, and the New York Times columnist was on the shuttle with me, and I said to her, "Hey," she says, "You like Michigan or you like Oregon?" And I said, "Oregon looks vulnerable to me, and maybe it's because I see them more. I look at them and I start picking them apart. But without Boucher, they were not supposed to be here. They're not the same team. Tyler Dorsey's doing special stuff that you see happen every March by somebody. Dylan Brooks hasn't quite been himself, but Jordan Bell has dominated. Can they do that against Carolina?
This would be the place where if you miss Chris Boucher, you're going to miss Chris Boucher. Carolina's big and they play big. You know, not every team in the country is big and plays big, particularly in this, you know, new world of basketball that is played almost exclusively behind the three-point line. But Carolina still wants to play the way that they've always played. They want to, you know, they'll set ball screens here and there, but they'd like to throw it in there and see what they can get and then throw it back out if they have to. They're literally the best offensive rebounding team in the country. They get 42% of their own missed shots. Like, when they miss a shot, they are almost just as likely as you to grab it and get it again. And when you do that, it makes you, A, obviously hard to deal with, but B, capable of overcoming so many other things. Like, you know, there are certain teams out there that if they don't shoot the ball well, they can't win. Carolina can shoot the ball poorly and still win because they just don't get their missed shots. And obviously, this is not the type of team you want to be shorthanded against in the front court. That said, again, I picked Carolina to win the game. Las Vegas has Carolina winning the game. But, you know, if we bump into each other in Phoenix on Saturday night after an Oregon victory over North Carolina, I won't grab you and say, John, I hope you're writing the craziest, best column of your life because this is something that nobody ever saw coming. It won't even be as big of an upset in my mind as Oregon beating Kansas in Kansas City. Everything's on the table, and that's what's going to make this weekend fun. I think, and this isn't always true. I don't think every year, like when George Mason went to the Final Four, I didn't feel like George Mason had a real shot to actually win two more games. I feel like everybody there in Phoenix can reasonably dream about cutting the nets down on Monday, Oregon included.
Gary Parrish, you're the best. Thank you, and I will see you there.
My man. I'll see you soon. Take care.